Hi, this is Katie Day, and you're listening to Creating Ripples, the program that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. Sometimes it's the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, I'm delighted to be interviewing two fabulous women, Rebecca and Jan. Both women are British. Rebecca is English and Jamaican, and Jan comes from Scotland. Jan and Rebecca launched Who's Wearing What Boutique Experience in 2009 with the idea of selling women's wear through venues and pop-up shops in East Sussex and the Kent borders. Both women had successful careers in the big city before deciding to relocate to the South Coast in their mid to late 40s. What started out as a part-time business with a turnover of £16,000 has become Who's Wearing What Boutique, a high street women's wear retail business with a turnover of just under £250,000 last year and now employing a manager. Rebecca says, "The business has been a huge creative outlet for me and has given Jan and I a sense of achievement and satisfaction." Welcome, Jan and Rebecca, and thank you so much for being part of Creating Ripples. It's a joy to have you here.
Hello.
You are allowed to speak. Now, I've known you two just before all of this kicked off. I remember I was at a Women in Business fair in Bexhill at the Coogan Beach Hotel, and I had a stand talking about style and image, and you two came along and said, "We're thinking of doing this. What do you think?"
I remember that.
Must have been, 2008, I guess. If you started
2008, yes, that's right. Yeah, we were researching then.
You were researching then. So kind of 8 years ago that you actually had the idea, and 7 years ago that you've been going.
Well, it took us a year of research. We did in-depth research.
Right.
And we decided that a year would be a good time
actually launched. What sort of research did you do before you decided it was a business idea worth exploring?
Well, we interviewed down at our local shopping centre, just asked people what they would pay for various items of clothing to get an idea about price point. And then we did research into the population, who was here, what sort of age groups, etc. And of course we went to trade fairs as well. We went to see what kind of clothes we could source.
Wow.
Yeah, we joined a number of women's networking groups.
Yeah.
And we used the questionnaire that we used on the high street and asked the ladies in these networking groups also what they would like to wear, what the price they would pay for a skirt, trousers, etc. So we gathered all of that information alongside us going to fashion trade fairs. And also using the internet. So we used a specific website, actually, who is one of the leading websites. We used their clothes as a template to decide what we were going to have. So from basics to what type of trousers. So we looked at all the different styles. And then we decided on our target market. And given that we were mid-40s, late-40s, we thought, actually, if we're going to do this, let's use our age and up.
Okay. So it's specifically aimed at kind of the late 40s going into 50s.
Yeah, because I think we were finding that in this town that we had moved to, there wasn't anything for us. So we were continuing to have to go back to London for buying clothes. And at that point, we didn't really shop online. So yes, both Jan and I, even the neighbouring towns like Bexhill, Battle, still didn't have what we wanted.
But I think the other thing was that the high street shops, we didn't feel catered for the 50s plus women.
Right.
A lot of them, particularly in our town, were geared towards the teenagers.
They are generally, actually, wherever you go, the main high street stores are, there's a certain part of Marks and Spencer's which is aimed at the older woman. But, you know, you look at that and think, yeah, you know what, my grand might have worn that, 40 years ago. But, actually, at my age now, even though I'm a woman in my 50s, I think a lot of the main high street shops haven't actually caught up with the fact of how young women over 50 are.
That's a good point, yeah.
They still think women over 50 are dressing as they did a couple of generations ago, and that's so not happening now.
And even actually 7 years, 8 years on, it's still the same.
Is it?
We're quite shocked. It's still how the high street, in smaller towns, are missing our market, our age group. Which is why we've gone from, in 3 years since we've opened the boutique, from where we were, the monies that we were taking, to nearly quarter of a million.
Yeah.
So quickly, because we're getting women down from Tunbridge Wells, Londoners, visitors, tourists, and they, when they walk into the shop, they say, they see it immediately. My goodness, you're catering for me.
Yeah, and you're right. Not many do, and we're getting more and more down from London now, aren't
we? Yes, we are.
People are coming who just come down for the weekend, or they're relocating from London. And at Hastings and St. Helens last year came in the Times top 5 places in the UK to live.
Yeah,
that's no surprise, is it? Really, it's fabulous. Yeah. It's got everything you want here. It's fabulous. And the wonderful fashion show that you both did last October. What was so fantastic was that not all of the models, but I would say 80% of the models were over 50.
Yes.
Which was fantastic. Deliberate. And not size zero, which was also fantastic. Yeah. I mean, like real women.
Yes.
You know, proper ages.
Yeah. No, we do.
And proper sizes.
We do a good old size range. We do from size 8 up to about 22.
Right.
24 sometimes.
So in America, what's the US equivalent of that?
A size 0 is a size 4.
So it would be a size 4 to a size 18, which would be the US equivalent of that. Yeah.
And I think that accommodating that size range in the shop and the price point we do has been a big part of our success. But certainly at the fashion show, we had models up into their 60s, late
60s. Sue was a model, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's 69. Nearly 70, that's right.
Yeah. And up to, again, you know, size 22 model there, as well as the smaller girls. So, no, it was
good. Very important.
Was that part of your mission statement or your values when you started Who's Wearing What, that you wanted to appeal to a cross range of audience with women? I mean, was that part of, when you were thinking about who we're aiming at, was it part, okay, we want to be fully inclusive of ages and sizes and styles?
Yes, inclusive was always the key point.
Right.
As the pop-up boutique, I mean, given that we were going into different towns, what we were seeing with different ages and different sizes. Yeah. So we basically wanted to offer that.
Yeah.
I mean, our big ethos is about natural fabrics.
Oh, okay.
That's really where we started from.
Right.
Because again, that wasn't particularly prevalent anywhere in the high street when we looked around. But thereafter, we come from a very mixed town.
Yeah.
It's been one of the most deprived towns in the country, in St. Leonard's. That's starting to change with people coming down, more people in jobs coming into the town. So we had to be quite careful about our price point, and that's what we said. We will always shop for the cheaper stuff, but we will try and get the best possible value by going for better clothes as well, giving women over 50 a really good choice, and not excluding anybody on the basis of size or of income from the shop. And again, that has been open door really to the town.
So you've been styling the town, haven't you?
We have, really. And I think ever since we opened the doors of the boutique on the high street, we have had, for example, silk tops priced at £35 or £39. Then on a medium sort of price point, another top, let's say at around £59, a dress for about £89. But over the 3 years, as we've grown, customers have asked for a higher price point.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so we have been able to establish, really probably for a dress, we've got now dresses for £195, which people buy and are happy to buy. So over that 3 years, the price point has increased greatly.
What do you think that's down to? Is it down to people having confidence that you're always going to deliver what they want?
Yes, I think that's the same in most businesses. The more confidence somebody has, the more trust that is built, then they will buy into that.
Yeah.
I think it's about retaining the balance. Mm-hmm. The, you know, the trust thing in us, we're local girls. We, when we say we've increased the price point, we don't swamp the shop with that. We give people this bits of that people can go to, but we never forget the lower income groups as well. And you know, girls who buy that £195 dress will also buy a £39 pair of jeans, which is a good old price.
Yeah.
In the UK, for a good pair of jeans.
So how did you start off? I mean, I know you started off with the pop-ups and going around. Was it to people's homes? Was it like an event in different towns? How did the whole thing kick off?
I think that was the original concept, the idea of a shopping clothes party, I think it was. And because we thought that was an easy entry into what we wanted to do in terms of we didn't have to pay rents, etc. We tried that for 6 months and it was erratic. It could be successful, but there was a lot of presumptions about going into somebody's home, that they had enough space, that the friends that they invited to the party had the price point or interest in our clothes, etc. And it became a lot, quite a lot of abortive work for us. So basically within 6 months, we changed our business strategy.
Oh my gosh, that quick?
Very quickly to booking venues in our own town in St Leonard's, but also in our neighbouring towns.
Okay.
So we would have a whole day in a premises and advertise that, and we then did the whole collecting of the email addresses, which has been a huge success for us. We then physically created a customer base for us. I mean, we did that, I think, Rebecca, for how many years? But 2.5 years. Yeah, 2.5, 3 years after that.
I mean, that's hard work.
Yes. From the day that we started, we launched in a boutique hotel in St Leonard's.
Okay.
And the press were there. And on that day, we had somebody outside. So on entry, any ladies coming in, the person outside asked for their email address.
Ah.
From day one, we had in St Leonard's actually quite an extensive email address.
Fantastic.
List. So any time we did something, we would email those customers and say, we are doing an event here, we're doing an event there, etc. And we did that everywhere we went, every single town that we went to, because otherwise how would they know we were there?
Yeah, absolutely. So what was behind the decision to stop doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's quite a risk going from no overheads, so basically, you know, in premises overheads, to overheads in St Leonard's.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, it was just experience. We were from the town, so it wasn't so much of a risk. We kind of we thought we understood what our town was about. Fortunately, the rents in our town were and are still relatively cheap compared to other towns. We'd had 3 years of experience of selling clothes, and we by that point felt fairly confident that we knew what people would buy. But yeah, you're right. It was a big risk because never had a shop before, never owned a shop or been through that process. But fortunately, it went incredibly smoothly. We didn't spend a lot of money kitting out the shop, did we, Rebecca?
No.
We did that unfairly in a good old we kept our overheads down.
I mean, really, it was, we had come to a point regarding our business plan, which we reviewed regularly. We had reached that point where we were doing approximately four pop-up boutiques a week. So on a physical level,
lugging
a whole boutique's worth into every venue, then packing it up.
Uh-huh.
Etc. And every night unloading the clothes again, because obviously they've got to look good. And it just so happened that this shop came up and it was there for rent, and the location was
in the high street,
in
the mid beside
Key.
And it's great because it's a corner, so you've got two lovely windows.
Best location.
Yeah, it's a great location.
Because it's always location, location, location.
It's always location, location.
So really, actually, if that shop hadn't come up, who knows?
Mm.
Because the shop was key.
Mm-hmm.
So after reviewing our business plan, saying, how are we going to keep this up? We've got to keep doing more. We're already doing 4 pop-ups a week.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, the shop was there and we had a meeting and we said, let's go for it. Why not? The other thing too is in our stats, St. Leonard's was always the town where we took the most.
Oh, interesting.
So even though we were going to places like Cranbrook, more affluent areas, Tenterden, St. Leonard's was always the place where we took most money.
Because we have so many individual spunky women
exactly,
in St. Leonard's
exactly.
who want to be different from Kent and Sussex suburbia,
exactly.
where everybody looks the same.
Exactly.
What's the great thing is about Hastings and St. Leonard's is the eclectic people, mix of people who live there here, and our individuality. So I can see how you would go down the storm and how you did go down the storm.
And that's why really, when we saw the shop and decided to go for it, we did not feel anxious at all. We felt very, very, very confident. Other people, I think, were anxious for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had the stats. We knew what was happening. So, thankfully, in all of it, setting it up, the most stress was actually the painting and the decorating and getting it ready for opening. But regarding is it going to work or fail, that didn't come into it. We knew it was going to work.
And it has been a great success. So that was, 2012?
Yeah, that's right. And I think when we had it all painted beautifully on the outside, decorated the windows done, we got such a sense of support from local people.
Oh,
we
that's
were contributing
good.
As
that's
well,
good.
I think, a bit to the regeneration of the high street.
Yeah.
And that's been lingering, that support. People are just very happy to see us there and doing well.
And what's really interesting is that your presence in St. Leonard's High Street, in that key position, has actually motivated other shop owners because I've noticed certainly in since you started, is that it was always a cafe society, but the cafes are changing and they're becoming a bit more funky and a bit more individual. And you know, you've got Bijou, that wonderful shop on by the seafront, which has the most amazing jewelry and accessories and. You know, so it is changing, isn't it?
It
complements
it
all.
Yeah.
So you all kind of really work well together.
Yes, we do.
So you both moved down from London.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing before you decided to do clothes?
I basically was a backing singer.
Were you?
Actually, yes.
Oh, wow.
From the age of 17...
Oh my gosh.
To about 37.
Wow.
Then I had a change. I'd sort of done that for long enough. And then I changed and studied interior design and retail display.
Oh,
so
right.
I've always had
a
passion for interior design and shops, shop windows. And after that course, I decided I didn't want to do either interior design or shop display. And I went to work for a friend in her small boutique, an independent boutique, which sold accessories predominantly.
Is that in London?
In London, yeah, in Hackney.
Right.
Broadway Market, which is actually, I think, one of the main tourist areas in London. So every Saturday they have a massive market there. So I worked for her for 2 years and very, very, very quickly, I think within about a month, she... was kind of like, you can just run it for me.
Gosh.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Which allowed her the freedom to buy and do all the other things that she needed to do to build her business. So really, regarding an independent boutique, I learnt so much from her because she allowed me to run with her boutique.
Wow.
And then I think, I don't know, after a few years... Not because of the boutique, I just felt, not because of anything actually, I just needed to leave London, and St. Leonard's seemed to be a good place to move to because I knew quite a few people here.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. So musician, singer-musician, shop manager. Shop owner.
It's a natural progression in life, Rebecca, clearly. Yeah.
But I must say, when I moved down here, I was fortunate enough to meet Jan.
Right.
We were friends for a year.
Right.
And then Jan said to me, come on, we didn't move down here to be working for other people. Let's think of something to do.
Okay.
So had it not been for Jan, there's no way I would be in this position now.
So you were the driving force then?
Yeah.
I think, again, driven by sort of dissatisfaction with the job.
Yeah. So what's your background? What were you doing before you moved down here?
I started in Glasgow. I worked for housing associations there. And I don't know if you know, Glasgow has got these beautiful tenement buildings, yeah, which were falling into disrepair. And housing associations in Glasgow were set up to deal with the refurbishment of them. So did that for quite a while and studied project management at Heriot Watt and moved around back down to England for work after that. And I came to Hastings in 2000. And had to leave. The job didn't work out. The company went into liquidation. So I left, but not before appreciating how wonderful the town was, St Leonard's and Hastings, and sort of saying, I will come back here one point. So basically about 6 years after that, I did come back to settle here. And I was doing a job in project management. I wasn't particularly getting a lot of satisfaction out of when I'd met Rebecca at that point. And we decided to have a little brainstorm about what kind of business we could do in the event that we did set something up. And the rest is sort of history.
Wow. Because it is a risk. I'm being self-employed myself and kind of going from that regular paid salary, paid holidays.
Well, we did it fairly steadily. We went part-time in the jobs that we were doing. Well, we were doing this pop-up shops, etc. We had a couple of days of regular income because basically we weren't taking an income from the business at that point. It was just so in its infancy. We probably didn't take money from the business until about year three.
Okay.
So we had a little bit of support, but it was tough. We weren't able to do the things we were used to. We had to sacrifice a lot for what we were doing. But it's grown wonderfully steadily to the position we were.
In fact, it was year three that we left our jobs. So we basically were full-time, and then we went down to 3 days each a week.
Right.
Then we went down to 2 days each a week, and then by year three, we were kind of like, we can't even do the 2 days. So by giving up those 2 days, we were able to do the 4 days a week of pop-up shops.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It enabled us to do that. Thankfully, the shop came up because, as I say, we could never have taken enough from being just the pop-up shop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it would never have made enough. It's not physically possible.
Yeah. But in terms of the experience of being self-employed versus that, I can't say, it's been absolutely fantastic, and I'd certainly recommend anyone who's thinking about it but having a go. But it's that whole pacing yourself to build it, not expecting to get an income for the
first couple of years.
I think a lot of people go into self-employment think that they will work less and earn twice as much, and you work twice as much and you earn half.
That's exactly.
Probably true.
It is.
You know, you need to have what you have in your mind and then swap it because, you know, the reality. But the difference is, and I say I gave up working 25 years ago. I now do what I love and I'm lucky enough that people pay me for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I actually gave up working a job 25 years ago, because if you're going to go into self-employment, you're not going to do something that you're half-hearted about, are you?
Absolutely.
Anybody who starts their own business, it's something that they have a passion for. So therefore, that passion, that drive, that motivation is what will push you through and make you successful. But it is tough.
I mean, I have always been self-employed up until I worked in my friend's boutique. And then when I came down here, and the job that I took when I came down here, which was full-time, as the months went by, I just felt so stifled. I was, because when I worked for my friend, it was still sort of in a self-employed way. I had the freedom. I did her windows. I was very much a creative part in her business as well. Then when I did this full-time job, by the second year, I felt like I had everything sucked out of me.
Gosh.
Yeah. So when Jan came up with the idea, it was kind of like, anything is better than what I'm doing. Exactly. I cannot stand it. So I have to say, I tried it for 2 years or 3 years being employed. I would never go back to it again.
I think it's difficult, I think, to employ. That does come ageism.
Yeah.
Legally shouldn't exist, but we all know ageism does exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the older you get it, it is more difficult to be. It's not impossible. I think more and more employers are coming around to valuing the skill set that an older workforce bring. But I am unemployable. I recognise I'm unemployable. Mm. Maybe because I hate being told what to do. Now looking back, I really feel sorry for the people who had to line manage me when I was young and when I was employed, because I'm not going to be in a nightmare.
I think I know better. There comes a point, I think, as well, where you don't want that kind of constraints, isn't it? An age thing. I think we know ourselves when we've had enough of whatever we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And want to move on.
So where do you source your clothes from?
A number of places, actually, and countries.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was clear to us that everything up and down the country on every high street is roughly the same, we were kind of like, okay, we're going to have to think outside the box and look outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
There are trade fairs all around the world, twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the London trade fairs. There's a couple up north. One in Birmingham, which we go to, which is more affordable price point. Berlin, Frankfurt, Paris, Copenhagen. So we've been to, Spain. We've been to all those countries. There are more, but we've been to all of those countries.
Do you go every year to each one?
As time has gone on, we've narrowed it down because when you go buying, which is generally, actually the buying season is about to approach us now. When you go buying, you find out very quickly that, so let's say we went to Frankfurt. We may have bought from three brands there.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost of going, staying,
mm-hmm.
two flights, etc.,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't warrant us going for just three brands that we're going to buy from.
Right, yeah, so makes sense.
So once we've established those brands and we've got a complete understanding of what they do, actually they can send us lookbooks or catalogues and we order from the lookbooks.
Right.
And we've learnt as time goes on how to judge whether it's right for us from that lookbook. That's a skill really which we've developed over the years.
Yeah, because with all the variety out there, it's sort of like kiddie in a candy store. How do you choose?
Well, a lot of it is it goes back to this natural fabric. So ideally what we're looking for is natural fabric and particular shapes that we all have sold.
Right.
So Rebecca and I, when we're at these trade fairs, we'll try on the clothes surreptitiously sometimes, because some people don't always like their customers to try on things, but we think it's very important to see how the actual garment fits on.
Absolutely.
Slightly different body shapes, but we kind of, when we have customers in mind when we're doing this. And the other thing is price point. I mean, there are a lot of beautiful clothes out there, but it's beyond the price point for our customer, whatever. So we it's a juggling exercise when we go there. Price quality all the time, but as Rebecca said, probably about 80% of our clothes are made in Europe, which is quite unusual if you compare that with the high street shop, where lot of the stock will be made in China. Nothing wrong with China, China can do good stuff, but it's generally the high streets associated with poor quality nowadays, unfortunately, and not natural fabric.
Right.
So that's our ethos. And then when it comes to this juggling the mix of clothes, so 80% we'll order at trade fairs. The other 20% we go to commercial areas in London and Paris, where we can still get source natural fabrics, but the price point is slightly lower. So we mix that in and it does look good
with the more expensive
stuff. So it's a little cocktail, isn't it?
Yeah.
A mix that we're juggling.
We actually work extremely hard. I mean, a number of our brands that we have, when we've ordered them, the initial order, the supplier on the stand says, we have nobody in England buying from us because we've gone to these obscure trade shows. So we did the groundwork in the beginning. And it really was a lot. Because, you know, I mean, for instance, Berlin Fashion Week or whatever, there is something like 6 different trade shows. So we would go for 3 days and run around going to all these different ones. But and now that we've done that twice, we've got 4 brands from those various trade shows that we can now order from their online catalogues, their lookbooks. So it was worth all of that initially. As time has gone on, we've noticed that some of those brands now come to London.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. There was a time that we would go to Paris regularly, and we again quickly realised that we didn't need to the trade show. We always go to the cash and carry area, but the actual trade show, and we stopped going because it was so expensive to go there. And then 4 or 5 years later, we thought, no, let's go again, you never know. We went, and every brand we ordered from were either from London or showed at the London trade show.
Wow.
So it just goes to set, to show you that London really is still the centre of the fashion world.
It is actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is.
So where are you taking this? I mean, you've been going now, it's 2009, so this is what, your 8th year, 7th year? 2016? 7th year, 3 years kind of on the road and 4 years in the shop.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be in 5 years' time?
Well, we just want to continue doing what we're doing.
Okay.
To be quite honest, we don't have really any aspirations to have other shops.
You don't.
Or things like that. We want to maintain our lifestyle as well.
Right.
So we want to continue building the business. We've got a manager in now. Our jobs are mainly marketing, training, and buying. But it does allow us a bit more time to have a life, which we're enjoying just now for the first time in quite a few years, I think. We get our concentration probably be in marketing to get more people to come through the shop.
Okay.
Use the shop as much as we possibly can to continue building rather than diversifying or building new bits. Okay.
Yeah, because the town, you know, from our stats, the majority of our customers are still St. Leonard's. So we've got the whole of Hastings. And that's what we're focusing on. A year and a half ago, we recruited a mentor. And he has helped us grow our business substantially. So the marketing side of it, we're using to drive people from Hastings into... But for whatever reason, and maybe other small businesses do this, it's kind of like you focus on what's right around you. When just around the corner, you know, there's a whole load of other people that you really need to be pulling in. And that's what we need to focus on. So I was told very early on, don't run before you can walk. And I know that a lot of people, when they've got a successful boutique or it's a successful whatever, they immediately branch out too quickly. Well, we've only had the shop for 3 years, so we need to get the most out of the shop before we decide.
Strategy. Strategy. So how, may I ask, how old you both are now?
I'm just 58.
And I'm
53.
53?
Oh!
Are we
a baby!
A baby! Not quite.
So what's been the biggest learnings for you in this enterprise?
Well, in terms of business. I think it's when something's not going right, to discuss it and change it rather than stew.
Okay.
Stew it over. And I think we've been fairly successful. We've had changes of direction
mm-hmm.
with the parties, the clothing
right.
parties, within 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Before we got annoyed with that or anything, we changed our strategy and then
mm-hmm.
into the shop. I think just being enthusiastic and being in touch with the business has allowed us to change when we needed to quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's answering your question, Katie, or is
well, it's about adaptability and flexibility
yeah, yeah.
and not being very rigid and stuck in your thinking. We said
yes.
we were going to do this, so
constantly
regardless
reviewing.
Of whether or not it's working, this is what we said we're going to do, so we keep going
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
It's the ability to
be prepared
to not
to
be
change.
Tunnel-visioned, but to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Very important.
Yeah, to think laterally and look at the periphery as well.
Yeah. We're always scrutinising it.
Right.
And we have weekly meetings, or three
mm-hmm.
times a week
mm-hmm.
we have meetings
mm-hmm.
outside of the shop. We still work in the shop one day each a week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in those weekly meetings... we discuss everything. You know, we look at the weekly stats, the takings, how can we improve on this, how can we improve on that. We need more size for clothing, we need larger sizes, we need more colour, we're buying too much black, not that many people came through the door that Saturday, why not?
Okay.
The shop needs a new fit, and so it goes on. We're always looking at it, and it does change. Not radically, but it does change. Has to, because that's
mm-hmm. yeah.
life, isn't
that's
it?
Life, absolutely.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to other women who might be thinking, yeah, you know, I'm not really... Yeah, I'm kind of in my mid-50s. I don't really like doing what I'm doing. I quite fancy. What am I really passionate about? Have I really got the courage to do that? What advice would you give to women who might be considering doing something similar?
My initial advice is to research.
Right.
Have the idea,
mm-hmm.
that beautiful, burning idea, and love it and cherish it. Put it to one side because you know it's there, and then research it.
Okay.
Ask your audience. Ask the people that may want it.
Mm-hmm.
End of, really. Because if you don't ask, how do you know?
Well, yeah, don't ask. That. Yeah, do you?
And also do a business plan.
Do a business
plan. Do a business plan.
Okay.
End of. They're not scary. They're really actually quite easy.
Yeah.
And it's quite, lets the creativity of ideas come out, isn't it? Because in the process of writing that, you're thinking
yeah.
of other things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the focusing and writing it down definitely helped. Got us through.
I know when I was younger, I always thought a business plan was a sort of quite a rigid... I didn't really know what it was, so it scared me. But a business plan is what you want it to be.
Yes.
So for those out there that are scared or put off by writing a business plan, the whole thing is about projection. It's where you want to be. We set off saying we wanted to earn £30,000 each out of the mobile business.
Mm-hmm.
Which... a lot of people snorted at. What? 60 grand from that little business. But that's what we wanted, £30,000 each. So it's the business plan is what you want from it.
Right.
So it's not
so
scary.
So
it's
start,
not a scary
off,
thing.
Start off with the dream and the vision and
yeah.
then work backwards
yes.
what you need to do to
yeah.
achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
Has it had an impact on your relationship as friends? Has that changed?
Yeah, I mean, Rebecca and I spend quite a lot of time together with the business.
Yeah.
But those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we're in each other's homes.
Yeah.
Cooking lunch for each other.
Right.
Which is lovely. But what we find is we cannot have necessarily the same friends. It just gets too complicated. The business is too important.
Ah.
So what we do, we have our own networks.
Okay.
Which actually pays dividends in any case for the business because... the more networks, the better it is for the shop. So yeah, we're very good friends, but we don't socialise.
Interesting.
But if we see each other, I mean, St Leonard's is a small town.
Yeah,
so
you see each other, don't ignore each other in the street.
No. And then when we go buying in Paris, you can see. see two young ladies sitting in the corner in a cafe drinking a margarita or a beer all night long after we've done a day shopping.
Yeah, it always
has
a good time.
Yeah, why does that not surprise me? Very nice window shopping to be had on the streets of Paris.
No, it's business, and then when the business is done, particularly buying, at the end of a hard day's buying, we will have a bit of fun.
Fantastic. Mm. That's a great way to end. Thank you both very much. You're a real inspiration.
Thank you.
This has been Katie Day, and you've been listening to Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50 are the new future.
Oh,
we are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.